Welcome to Type Tune Tint. I'm Tom Kranz. Today we meet poet Adele Kenny, who knows a thing or two about life, love, and survival, and just had her 1,000th work published.
Sit down and write a poem. What comes to mind? All the pretty sunsets, all the silly times. Anything I think of, just gotta paint a picture. Try to capture feelings and throw it into the mixture.
And we are here with Adele Kenny from the heat capital of the northeastern United States, Fanwood, New Jersey. We're in the middle of like a never-ending heat wave right now. Adele, I hope you're keeping cool.
Well, I'm trying. I'm sitting under a ceiling fan and I have the central air on, which has not been off in days. And I don't expect it to be off for some time yet.
But forever, yeah, I know.
We're managing.
We just got a notice that we're supposed to conserve water here and the heat's going to happen for another 4 days. So I'm actually pretty happy to be sitting in a cool room and doing this with you right now. So Adele is Adele has a very long CV. I'll try to keep it kind of capsulized for you right now. Adele is essentially a lifelong writer, English teacher, poet. She's taught poetry. She's judged poetry contests. Adele is widely published. And one of the hooks for our interview today is she recently posted that she had her 1,000th publication. And I don't know, is that just in this one magazine? Is that in Exit 13? Or is that your entire life publication history or what?
That's my entire life.
So this is, you just had your 1,000th poem.
Which happened to be in Exit 13.
And we'll talk more about what Exit 13 is. It's a poet's magazine that's really very unique, and I hope you folks out there will give it a look. But she's also the poet laureate of the borough of Fanwood, where we both live here in, we call it Central New Jersey, but where I used to come from, Philly, it's Northern New Jersey, but that's another whole show. So Adele, tell me first of all, and you know, I don't want to start a 1 hour kind of discussion of your entire life, but let's begin at least when did you start writing poetry and why poetry as opposed to fiction, nonfiction, or anything else?
Well, the summer I was 4, just before the Salk vaccine, I was diagnosed with something that the doctors called polio fever, which was of course polio. And I was one of the lucky ones. I wasn't left with a lifelong disability, but that whole summer was spent in bed with my poor mom trying to entertain me and keep me busy. And, you know, I wasn't walking, but she found so many things for me to do. And most important among them was to read to me. And I reached a point where I really wanted to read and write on my own. And I guess I must have told her that. She always told the story of me telling her that I didn't want her to read to me anymore. I wanted to read on my own. So anyway, she had no training as a teacher, but somehow or other, she taught me to read that summer. I can remember sounding out words in poems, mostly the poetry of Eugene Field, you know, Wink and Blink and a Nod, and those wonderful old poems. And in the Bible, the Gospel of St. John, in the beginning was the Word. And that whole time in my life was really all about words. And somehow or other, my mother managed to teach me how to read and also to write a little bit. We would spend time each day where we could only speak in rhymed couplets. That was her invention. And it was fun. You know, I would say things like, I am a tiger and I can chase. I will scare you with my face. But anyway, fortunately, I recovered. Things got better. And, you know, I was up and at 'em again. But I never lost my love and desire to write. And of course, because my mom had done so much with poetry, during that summer, poetry was what I wanted to do. And I just always wanted to write poetry.
So this all started before you even started going to school then?
Yeah, I was 4. It was that summer. Well, I started school the summer, the fall that I was 4. Mm-hmm. I started late, but I started school early. But yeah, before school, before everything.
Well, that's pretty amazing that your mom actually taught you essentially how to read and to some extent how to write. Yeah. You know, before you even set foot in school. So that obviously gave you a running start as a kid going to school. And you've basically been reading and writing. Well, writing, did you start writing pretty much regularly then? Or was it later on in life that you started really sitting down and saying, you know, I love poetry and I'm going to write now?
Well, I wrote a little bit. And as I said, I don't really remember if I did the actual writing or if I dictated to my mom and she wrote them down. I think there was some of that initially, and then later I wrote them on my own. Mm. But I don't know. It was sort of like I didn't choose poetry. Poetry chose me. It was just something I did and have always done. It's been, pretty much a lifelong love affair with poetry.
You know, you're not the first artist who's...
It wasn't a conscious choice.
I interviewed an artist a few podcasts ago who basically said, I didn't choose creativity. Creativity chose me. And I think that's so funny because it's kind of a common theme among people who are really passionate about their art. They can't imagine not doing it, you know, and they can't imagine not discovering it. And so I guess you kind of make the connection that, well, it kind of came to me and now it's a part of me. So you kind of embarked on a life that revolved around writing and reading, and you ultimately became an English teacher, as I recall, correct?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And where did you do that? Did you do that in public school, or where did you do that?
Yeah, public school. I taught in the Rahway public school system for 20 years, and I had gone to the Rahway public school system. So it was, kind of an interesting transition to go from one side of the desk to the other. Mm. But so I did that. I also taught creative writing and creativity at the College of New Rochelle, which is where I got my master's. I started as a kind of a research assistant, and then they took me on as an adjunct, and then I became a regular teacher there. So teaching has been part of my process all along too, but I retired in 1990 when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And it just wasn't possible for me to, do the stairs and keep up with the daily commitment to being a good teacher. And I've just been writing ever since. I do a little bit of teaching here and there. I taught at the Stangler Police Academy for 10 years. Hmm. That was great. My best teaching experience ever. I absolutely loved it. Tony Parenti was the director at that time, and he was the one who brought me on board. So
What did you teach at a police academy?
Report writing.
No kidding.
Yeah, I taught writing.
Oh, that's a riot. So you taught basically cops how to write clearly and exactly. Using correct grammar and don't write like you're 4 years old anymore, that kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. That's
what it was.
Yeah.
Well, and how long did you do that?
10 years. Damn. 1998 until I think 2008 I think it was about that. It was 10 years.
And let me ask you this. When you were teaching in the Rahway school system, were you teaching, what ages were you teaching?
Well, I started with seventh and eighth grade.
Okay.
And then I went to the intermediate school, the elementary school, because I had gotten the master's in gifted. And so I went and did gifted ed at the elementary level. But I also taught creative writing where I had a federal grant, and I moved from one school to another all during the week and was teaching every grade level. So I've actually taught everything from kindergarten to graduate school at one point or another.
Was part of it teaching poetry or dealing with poetry with the kids?
Yes. Yeah. When I did the creative writing program, that was a large part of it. Poetry was easier to work with than short stories or any kind of short fiction. So it was mostly poetry.
I only ask because I was a real underachiever in high school in English classes. And I got to tell you, when in 10th grade, when Mr. Korosik made each of us in his class memorize a chunk of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, I thought I was going to die and not survive that class. It was like, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to learn this? And we spent a lot of time on the romantic poets, Keats and Shelley.
Byron,
and
Shelley, Keats.
Exactly, all those guys. Yeah. So I went ahead and I memorized my, he is an ancient mariner and he stoppeth one of three by thy long gray beard, blah, blah, blah. And that's pretty much all I remember now. But I then became really kind of interested in John Keats. And that was like a year later when I was a junior, I guess. And I had a much better English teacher, in my opinion. What the hell did I know? I was only 15. and, to this day, I once in a while read some of John Keats's odes. Wow. And, beauty is truth, truth is beauty, et cetera. And I remember that always takes me back to the original days when I was trying to learn poetry and trying to figure out why I need to do this. And of course, you know, I knew everything at age 15. Now I know probably a lot more. So I kind of get it more now. But did you find resistance to being dealt to among kids to either learn or to write poetry?
Not really, no, because I always tried to make it fun for them. You know, it was like, okay, we've been doing grammar and spelling all week. Today, we're going to write a poem, and everybody can write a poem. Anybody can do it, you know, and I would give them sort of like little formats to use, pattern poems, so that success was easy for them. So they pretty much enjoyed it. I never really met with much resistance at all. I think they were just relieved not to be doing grammar and spelling.
Well, thank God you didn't have me as a student. That's all I can say.
Thank God I didn't have me as a student. In 10th grade, I had a teacher who told me, Mr. Casey, I'll never forget him, told me that I should not write poetry anymore because I had talent.
Is that right?
We had to write some poems for one assignment or another. Yeah. And apparently he didn't care for what I wrote. And he called me up to his desk and said, Del, listen, I just want to give you a little heads up here. You really shouldn't try to write poetry anymore. Oh, you really don't have a talent for it. But I got my own back, Adam, because many years later I was doing a workshop series for the state. And I was sent to his school, and he was principal at this new school. And I just left a copy of one of my books on his desk.
That's a riot.
I just left the copy of the book. I didn't say anything or, you know, but yeah, that was, it hurt tremendously.
I'm sure it did, but it just goes to show you follow your muse and you follow your passion, whatever anybody else says, and the hell with them, right?
Absolutely.
More with Adele Kenny in just a moment.
The Earth is dying a slow death. The 5,000 people living on the moon are in trouble. Their paradise has become a cautionary tale of human weakness. We need a hero. Enter Rick Mack and the Planetary Commission to save the Earth, the moon, and themselves. Moon Rescue. Escape from the Dome by Tom Krantz. Now available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook.
I asked you to be prepared to read your 1,000th poem. I want to just talk a little bit about the magazine that this was published in. It's published in a magazine called Exit 13, folks. You can find this on Facebook/Exit13 Magazine. And this is a magazine that's compiled right here in the borough of Fanwood, New Jersey, by another poet named Tom Plant. And Tom, who I'm going to have on in a subsequent podcast, hopefully soon, Tom and Adele are the curators of the poetry series in Fanwood that we've been talking about. And Tom's been putting this magazine together for, I'm looking here, how long has he been doing this here?
Since the 80s. I'm not sure.
Yeah, a couple decades. But this is essentially, it looks like it's a yearly compilation of just lots of poets by local and regional and national poets. And you've been a fairly regular contributor to this. And the poem that he published in this edition is called This Light, October 2nd. And tell us a little bit about this poem, and then I'm going to ask you to read it. What's the, where did this poem come from?
Well, the poem really was, I was here, you know, and it was this past October 2nd. It was actually written on that day and fine-tuned and honed after that, of course. But I was sitting here, I was thinking about the Great Swamp. And I had been reading Thomas Merton. He's one of my favorite authors. And I've been reading Merton. And the poetry for me always begins as a single image, a phrase, a line, an idea. And we talked about this before. I mean, you could be literally, pardon the expression, sitting on the toilet in line at a grocery store. And all of a sudden you get this idea, this image. And, you know, if you don't write it down immediately, you kind of lose it. But it started with one of the images in the poem. And I just kind of took it from there. But anything that I write always begins with a single line, image, phrase. I never have an idea of what the poem is going to be about.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the Great Swamp. I just want to tell our viewers the Great Swamp. Okay. I guess you're talking about the Great Swamp in Chatham, right?
Yeah, up by the Lupacon Memorial Blind and the trails where you can walk through. And
right, so it's basically a swampy area that's kind of near where we live in Chattanooga. It's a wildlife preserve and a park, and it's so. Were you there? Is when you mentioned that you were there when this came to you?
No, I was home. This was okay. COVID. I wasn't going.
But you were thinking about it.
But it popped into mind, you know, sort of unbidden and
I got you.
It was just there.
So I just want to get my one more two cents in here about something you just said, which is that the poem for you starts. It can start as an image, a phrase, even a word. I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed on this very podcast, musicians and artists and writers, who all say the exact same thing, especially musicians. The woman I interviewed basically said it starts as a line. You know, I may be driving and a line comes into my brain and that builds, you know, I build on that. And then, you know, I maybe bark it into my phone so I don't forget it. And then I get home and I sit with my guitar and you probably sit on your computer. And it's amazing. You know, I think a lot of people think that artists have this grand scheme, and I guess some do, and some writers, you know, they outline their 52 chapters before they write a word. I don't do that either. I start with an idea, and I start writing, and whatever happens, happens. And it sounds like that's kind of the process we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like I have no idea where the poem is going to go, and I can't even say that the poem writes itself because I work on them, but... Yeah, it just begins with that one single line, phrase, image, word, whatever. And it just moves from there.
All right. So if you would please grace us with a reading of This Light, October 2nd.
Okay. The poem begins with an epigraph by Thomas Merton, which is, "No writing on the solitary, meditative dimensions of life can say anything that has not already been said better by the wind in the pine trees." And that's from Thomas Merton.
Okay.
"This light. I haven't been here in such a long time. I forgot how still the water is, how soft the air's silence, the quality of light as it starts to fade. At dusk, the sky's cast blue darkens and eddies gently toward night. Close in the order of their being, a deer and her fawn move away from the forest to graze in a sheltered space where field and woodland join. Deep in the forest, tall pines fill with wind that towers upward. It reminds me that despite whatever falls, life is still a skyward thing. It's good to be alone with only these trees and the wind's spirit. This moment, a dimension beyond all distance and time. Today is the feast of guardian angels, the ones with kind wings who watch over us and protect us. Whether you believe in them or not, such things seem possible here, as one bird scatters into dozens of smaller birds that tip the sky forward before they disappear, as we all must disappear, taking with us what little we know of infinite wisdom, infinite love."
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, this poem started with the deer, the mother deer and the baby deer, because, as you know, living in Fanwood, we have a massive herd of deer that wanders around. And I had looked out the window and there was a mother deer and her fawn. And that's the image that this whole poem started with.
And how long?
I had no idea what it was going to be about.
How long did it take you to finish this from beginning to end, pretty much?
Weeks.
Weeks, really?
The version that I read may be slightly different from what Tom published in Exit 13.
No, I followed along. It was pretty much right on.
I change them constantly. And sometimes, I look at a book that's been published and I say, oh, God, how did I let that go out into the world? You know, and I change the wording in my books, you know, so that.
Oh, yeah. I don't read any of my books once they're printed because I always catch stuff that I would change or that I can't believe I wrote that. And it just makes me cringe. So I just.
I know. It's those cringeworthy moments of realization that something went to press before it should have. But yeah, so it takes me weeks and weeks. I'll plot along. And then typically what I do is I get a draft and it could be, you know, 10, 20, 25 drafts. And I figure this is close to being finished, but then I put it aside for a few days.
Sometimes and then you come back to it, right?
And then come back to it. that gives you kind of clarity about, you know, where you've gone. And sometimes you look at the poem and you say, well, this is going in the garbage can, you know. Yeah. You look at it and you say, hey, this isn't so bad. You know, I'm going to keep working on this.
Do you have a specific time and place that you write, or do you just kind of do it as you can fit it into your day? Or?
You know, I've been asked that before, and I always say my muse is really fickle. You know, she takes these three martini lunches and vacations in the south of France, and I don't see her half often enough. The point is, I can't sit down and say, okay, now I'm going to write. I just can't. I've just never been able to work that way. So for me, it's what it's about is, you know, when the image appears, I start working on it. And, you know, it may take weeks and weeks before the poem comes to any kind of closure at all. But I can't work from prompts, you know, writing workshops. I conduct workshops where I give people prompts and they come up with beautiful things, but I can't do that. I can't kind of write on cue. I just have to wait until the fickle little lady shows up and gives
I got you. What I like about your poem, and I reviewed one of your books a couple of years ago, your poems are very, they flow very freely. You know, it's not da 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 da. You know, there's no, it doesn't fit into a formula of iambic pentameter or whatever. And I think that's a lesson I kind of learned from rap music. You know, a lot of rap is the same way. It just kind of flows and it tells its story its way. And that's poetry. You know, I think a lot of people, especially older farts like myself, you know, people think that, you know, a poem has to rhyme and it has to be in this particular order and it has to be haiku or it has to be this or it's that. But that's not the case at all, is it?
No, I mean, that's the kind of poetry that people our age grew up on. But primarily I write in free verse with internal rhythms and sounds and, you know, alliteration and assonance and trying to make the music within the poem rather than having that forced, horrendous end rhyme. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with rhymed poetry, there isn't, but I think sometimes it just becomes so forced that it loses its power and its punch. So I try to work within the lines to create the music.
Sure. And here's an area that I've touched on with quite a few other writers and musicians. You've had, you know, your share of physical problems in your life. You know, at a very young age, you had polio, which is a disease that's unknown to people beyond our generation. But you got over that. And then later on in life, you were diagnosed with MS. Do you find that writing is in any way a coping mechanism for that, for dealing with, you know, kind of those, the down parts of life?
Absolutely. I don't typically write when I'm in the midst of I'll call it a crisis, and you can see the air quotes there. But afterwards, you know, or when I'm, when things are starting to improve, I find that writing helps me define and clarify not so much what happened, but my own reaction to it, you know, my feelings. You know, I always say that history records whatever happened during a particular era of time, and it gives you the facts, but poetry records the feelings of a particular time. You know, for like right now, if we were to write about the war in Ukraine, we'd be writing about our feelings, not the details of the events, although they may figure somewhat into the work. So for me, it's a way of defining and clarifying who I am in the middle of whatever has happened. I mean, I've had a lot of health issues in my life. I've had breast cancer twice. I've been, you know, up and down and down and out. And there's always, at the end of it, a poetry to write. And I don't necessarily deal specifically with health issues or whatever issues may have come up, but you know, it's just, it's feelings.
Well, keep on writing and keep on feeling. You are definitely a treasure to us here in this town. And every time I talk to you and meet you, I feel uplifted because you're an incredibly positive person. At least you are to the public. I don't know if you're this way when you're alone with your dog, but you know, And he's adorable also, by the way.
He's Chaucer. Right here next to me sleeping. His name is Chaucer.
Chaucer, right. Exactly.
The father of English poetry, yeah.
I know. You post his picture all the time. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Adorable. My first Yorkie was Dylan for Dylan Thomas. Then I had Yeats for William Butler Yeats. And now I have Chaucer. So, you know, we try to keep it in the realm of literature and poetry.
Oh, that's great. Well, Adele has had... Adele, what is the name of your... What is the best place for people to buy your stuff? Is all your stuff on Amazon? Or
Amazon. It's all on Amazon.
So yeah. if you search on Amazon, Adele Kenny, it's K-E-N-N-Y, Adele Kenny. Everything she has is there. And if you're interested in Exit 13, the magazine, go to the Facebook page called Exit 13 Magazine, and you can see postings there. You can communicate with Tom Plant, who is the publisher, and you can get a subscription, or he can send you copies. I think they cost, he charges $13 for one. But it's a yearly, it's packed full of poetry. And a lot of these poems are really award worthy and just very thought provoking and great. Adele Kenny, thank you so much for being with me. Adele is the poet laureate of the town of Fanwood. Her latest is in the magazine Exit 13 magazine, which you can find on Facebook. And Adele, I hope to see you around town. You be well.
Poetry takes words, turns them into sweet songs that I heard. Poetry, it connects every topic and every subject. Yeah. Poetry.
The Earth is dying a slow death. The 5,000 people living on the moon are in trouble. Their paradise has become a cautionary tale of human weakness. We need a hero. Enter Rick Mack and the Planetary Commission to save the Earth, the moon, and themselves. Moon Rescue. Escape from the Dome by Tom Krantz. Now available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook. These are the questions explored in the podcast, Type Tune Tint. Tom Krantz chats with writers, musicians, and artists, most of whom found their talent by accident, late in life, or hiding under layers of denial. Subscribe to Type Tune Tint wherever you get your podcasts.